Shotgun. Marino throws deep downfield. It is caught by Fryer. Touchdown! Yes! Touchdown, Dolphins!
With in-depth analysis on the Miami Dolphins.
The Rangers call! That's on 4th and 5!
Live from the DolphinsTalk.com studios.
In my opinion, the greatest fans in the NFL, Miami Dolphin fans.
DolphinsTalk.com daily.
All right, Miami!
Good morning, Dolphins fans. How are you today? And thank you for listening to DolphinsTalk.com Daily, the most listened to daily Miami Dolphins podcast on the internet. I am your host, Mike, on this Saturday, December 1st. I can't believe it. December is here, and we got a great show for you today. Later on in the podcast, I will be joined by Stephen Masso, who has a Miami Dolphins podcast of his own over at Via the Source, as we talk all things Miami Dolphins and preview this upcoming week's game against the Buffalo Bills on Sunday, as well as talk about all the Miami Dolphins, the hot topics around the team these days when it comes to head coach Adam Gase and all the other stuff. So be on the lookout for that. And also get used to hearing Steven here at DolphinsTalk.com, as he's going to be doing some fill-in podcast work for me in the coming weeks and months here at our website. So we want to welcome him to our little DolphinsTalk.com family, and get used to hearing Steven, as he is, he's a great reporter and will be doing great work for us here as well. Before I get to that, though, there's two topics I want to talk about. First, it was announced that HBO will be releasing a 75-minute documentary on former Miami on Miami Dolphins Hall of Fame linebacker Nick Bonacani in February. On February 12th is the date it will air. And this looks like it's going to be great. It's good. Yes, it's going to talk about his time as a player. Yes, it'll talk about his time as a sports agent. And, of course, his time as a broadcaster on HBO's Inside the NFL, which it seemed like he had that job forever. So it's going to talk about that. But I think it's mainly going to focus on the post-playing days of his life, which, first and foremost, the work he's done with his son Mark, raising money for the Miami Project to cure paralysis, and I don't even know how much money, the millions upon hundreds of millions probably he has raised for that, for those of you, because Nick, you know, he's been retired for a while now, so most of you listening might not even know or got to see Nick play or even know who he really is. Nick was a Hall of Fame linebacker for the Dolphins from 1969 pretty much through 1976. Great player. And his son Mark was playing football for the Citadel, became paralyzed in the game, and from that moment on, him and his son Mark have just raised so much money for the Miami Project and done amazing work for them. And I think it's also going to cover this show is also going to cover, you know, the last few years of Nick's life. Nick is 77 now. He's pretty much immobile. Stages of dementia, Alzheimer's, which they think is tied to CTE, and, you know, it's sad. I had the opportunity to meet Nick. God, it's got to be about 12 years ago now, maybe even a little bit more, to chat with him for like 5 or 10 minutes. Super nice guy, super engaging, really friendly, just an amazing person. And it's sad to see all the health issues he has now. He has said he will be donating his brain upon his death for research. So the people who do that research on CTE and brains and all that stuff, they're going to be able to, you know, do research on his brain when he does die. But, this looks like it's going to be an amazing show. It comes out on February 12th, and looking forward to seeing it. The other thing I want to talk about, and this one is, this one's a little bit of a left turn from the last story. Sports Illustrated asked their football writers, all the football writers they have at their website, to rank the NFL's most boring teams. And they came up with a list of 8, and of course the Miami Dolphins are on it. They were, by most of their writers, they were either ranked last as the most boring team in the NFL or second to last. So it's pretty much, it came down to like Miami and Jacksonville on most of these writers' lists. And I got some quotes here by some of their writers. And folks, it's not going to be pretty. One of their NFL writers, Mitch Goldich, said, "No franchise has simply plodded along quite like the Dolphins." He went on to add, that quarterback Ryan Tannehill's era has been an extended run of mediocrity. Ouch. This was Andrew Brandt. Andrew Brandt wrote, everyone knows Andrew Brandt. This is not to say the Dolphins are a bad team or poorly coached. Rather, there is simply nothing particularly interesting about them. They have a boring coach. They have a boring quarterback who is injured a lot. He goes on to say, they seem to always be a team, albeit with some success, that's a year away from being a year away. Which, let's be honest, if there's ever a Miami Dolphins saying, that has to be it. The Miami Dolphins are always a year away from being a year away. And it's true, the head coach is boring. The quarterback is boring. There's nothing interesting about them. Another writer for their website, Gary Gramling, named the Jaguars as the most boring team. But he still found a way to take a shot at the Dolphins. He goes, at this very moment, the Miami Dolphins are the most boring team because they run the ball on 3rd and 10 in the final moments of a tie game. We saw it last week. It's 100% true. And there's a lot more. I just read you three of the writers' quotes. It's not pretty. Now, the final eight of the most boring teams were the Dolphins, Jacksonville, the Lions, the Raiders, the Cincinnati Bengals, the Arizona Cardinals, the New York Jets, and the last one I put an asterisk next to. Yes, they are really boring, but this team actually wins, and that is the New England Patriots. So I put an asterisk next to Patriots because if you win as much as them, you can be boring. Nobody cares. But the other teams, Miami, Jacksonville, Lions, Raiders, Bengals, Cardinals, Jets, there's no doubt about it. Those teams, they are boring. Look, we're all fans of the Dolphins. The Miami Dolphins are a boring team. They do nothing well. They don't have a top-flight quarterback. He's just not very good, folks. We have to come to grips with this. The rest of the NFL world looks at Miami, and they cannot believe we have stuck with this guy as long as we have. He's just not very good. He's not awful. He's just not very good. Hence, he's boring. He is. He's just a boring quarterback. Every now and then, he'll make a big play, like he did last week against the Colts. A 74-yard touchdown to Leonte Carew. And he'll make a big play like, whoa, that's kind of exciting. But, you know, you got to wait. You see one of those plays once every 3 months. You know, it's like it's just not very good. You have a head coach who is very short with the media, doesn't say particularly anything interesting unless he's just vamping or saying stuff that comes off his head scratching. He's boring. The team doesn't score a lot of points. The team, aside from like Rashad Jones, doesn't really have an impact player on defense. And even with a safety, it usually means he's making plays, you know, 6-7 yards downfield, not a sack or anything. So that's kind of boring. They're just a boring team. They are. They're boring. That's why, you know, when I have on people like the Big O, Orlando, Elzagari and such, we sit here and say, this team has nothing that really, it's more than even just being that they're just not interesting to watch, that you don't see any hope. Like what are they going to do this offseason that'll give you hope in 2019? You cannot reshape an entire roster. Like, they're not going to go out and get Aaron Rodgers this offseason. So it's going to be like next year, they're going to either go out there and get a Teddy Bridgewater, Joe Flacco type who will be a sort of caretaker for a year or so. And maybe they draft a kid in round one, which from all the signs, it sounds like that's what they're going to do. And, you know, it's still going to be somewhat boring. It's not going to be someone who's super exciting. Maybe they play better than Ryan Tannehill. Okay. But, like, the wide receivers, yeah, we got some fast guys. Okay. The running back, you know, we're starting a 35-year-old running back in Frank Gore. You know, Frank Gore's been great, but it's not exactly exciting. So, I don't know. But, it's tough to argue with the people at Sports Illustrated who put the Miami Dolphins as either the most boring team in the league, or, you know, one of the most boring teams in the league. They were in, like, the bottom of pretty much everyone's list. You know, there's only 32 teams in the league. They're at the bottom of most, either 32nd or 31st. They were down there. And so, but it is what it is. And perception is reality. So, after these final five games, we'll see what happens this offseason. Who's going to be staying? Who's going to be going? As I've been saying for many weeks, or pretty much, as I've been saying for about a couple weeks now, status quo can't happen. And I don't know who needs to go, if it's the head coach or if it's the quarterback or maybe both. But status quo can't happen. They need to shake it up this offseason. They need a breath of fresh air. They need to open the windows and let the stink out. Essentially is what they need to do. Open the windows and let the stink out. Because right now in Miami, it stinks. It stinks. And it's not working because they're not winning enough games. And do not give me the injury excuse. Yes, Miami might have a few more injuries than most teams. But, you know, a lot of teams in this league have injuries. And they did not lose to Indianapolis or Cincinnati this year because of injuries. When you have a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter and you can't bring the game home, you're not losing because of injuries. You played well enough for three quarters to build that double-digit lead. You're losing because you have an incompetent head coach and a quarterback who can't make enough plays. That's why you're losing, not injuries, okay? So I don't want to hear about the injury excuse. So there does come a time where you just have to open up the windows and let the stink out. So we'll see. But, so that article or that, from Sports Illustrated and the writers, not very friendly to the Miami Dolphins right now. So what I'm going to do is take a quick break. And after the break, I will be joined by Stephen Amasso. And we are going to talk about all things Miami Dolphins. So sit tight, and we'll be back after this.
The DolphinsTalk.com Podcast Network brings you only the best podcasts covering the Miami Dolphins. With fins up, fans down, welcome to Perfectville, the same old Dolphins show, the Landon and Jeff show, as well as DolphinsTalk.com daily podcast, you will get in-depth coverage from diehard passionate Miami Dolphins fans each and every week. Be sure to listen to all these great podcasts and check them out at DolphinsTalk.com.
Joining me on the DolphinsTalk.com hotline is Stephen Amasso, who has a Miami Dolphins podcast of his own on Via the Source. Stephen, how are you doing today?
Hey, I am doing pretty good. How are you doing?
I am doing great. So before we start talking about the Dolphins, why don't you tell people a little about yourself and where they can find you on Twitter?
Okay, well, my name is Stephen Amasso. I am from Texas, South Texas, down by the border. I just graduated college from the University of Texas, Rio Grande Valley. I am a lifelong Dolphins fan. I got pictures since, you know, birth, basically, in, you know, Dolphins attire. I am on Twitter at Shady Steven and also at Via the Source. I have a podcast that I do, and I just like to focus on the Dolphins. I touch on teams around the NFL as well, just because I think it's important to kind of know the rest of the league as well, and to put it into perspective about what's happening with Miami. I think it all goes hand in hand. So you can check me out again, Shady Steven at Via the Source.
Awesome, awesome. Good to hear. So let's talk about the Miami Dolphins. Right now, their season isn't going the way many would like, and I'm sure many of the guys on the team would like. Heartbreaking loss this past week against the Indianapolis Colts. What do you think about the Miami Dolphins' season so far?
So far, I think it is kind of what a lot of people expected. Because I heard the ESPN rumors, I think we all did at the beginning of the season, that this was a 3-win team, and we all kind of looked at it, you know, like that was ludicrous. I know personally I was like, okay, I know that's not going to happen. This may not be the greatest team. It may not be a for-sure playoff team, but it was definitely better than a 3-win team, and I think that is kind of what we're seeing. I think people who thought this was going to be, you know, just like this marvelous team may have been reaching just a little bit. I think there were definitely some holes. We're starting to see them now, and I think one thing I said after watching the Colts game was, I think this team kind of needs an identity, because I look around the league, and an example would be the Jaguars, right? I mean, they're not a good team by any means, but you look at the team and you know what you're getting with that team, that their force, their identity, it's their defense, and it's the fact that they're going to pound the rock. They may not have a good offense, but you look at that defense and that's their identity. You look at teams like the Chiefs, the Saints, their identity is that they have like these high-octane offenses. And then you look at, you know, the Cowboys, the Panthers, guys who are going to pound the rock all day long. And I'm just wondering, okay, well, what is the Dolphins' identity per se? Because it is not the offense right now. The offense is kind of in disarray. It's not the quarterback. We kind of have like an average quarterback with Ryan Tannehill. It is, you know, it's not the defense right now, for sure. The defense is up and down. They get a lot of turnovers. So I'm just kind of wondering, well, what is the identity on this team? Because the identity can't just be that we're, you know, kind of squeezing by. There needs to be a force on this team that defines what the team is. So that's just kind of how I think the season has unfolded and what I think we need to address moving forward. We need to find, like, some sort of identity.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. They do need to find an identity. And I also think after this year, they also need to find a new look at quarterback, because it's not even that Tannehill has played that bad. It's just that he's just average. And I don't know if he'll ever be better than just average. And there does come a point, he has been here since 2012, where they just have to sort of start over. And sometimes a change of scenery for him might actually help him. Mm-hmm. And I think for the organization, just a fresh look, a fresh face back there at quarterback, which is so important to each NFL team, just might help out both parties. So at the end of the year, who knows what's going to happen. But I think Tannehill, his time might be up here in Miami. What's your thoughts on Ryan Tannehill?
Well, the thing that a lot of the writers are saying, and I agree with it, is he's not the problem, but he's also not the solution. Because if you put him on several other teams, like if you put him on the Jaguars team right now with that defense, you know, he could definitely upgrade that team and potentially put him in a spot to win a playoff game, you know. Or if you put him in a different situation, you know, in Dallas with Ezekiel Elliott and with a solid offensive line, and his role is, you know, decreased. But I think in the situation in Miami, there's too much falling on his shoulders. So in that sense, he is not the problem, but he's also not the solution. I think he's kind of run his course. I mean, there may be potential for him to grow, but it's just been too long. We can't keep depending on that to happen. And at some point, you have to go with someone else. And the passes he's making, I don't think we're demanding too much of him either. It's a lot of short passes, a lot of screen passes. I just think it's something that a rookie quarterback could learn to do and potentially show more improvement than what Tannehill has in his career so far. I think it's time to start thinking about moving on.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And I agree 100%. He's not the number one problem with the team, but he's also not the answer either. He's not, he can't sort of put the team on his back and sort of take over a week when everyone else is not playing well and sort of lead them to a win, which is what you need, yeah. You know, a few times a year out of your starting quarterback. There's going to be weeks where things aren't going as well as you had thought or had planned, and you just need your starting quarterback to say, guys, I got this one, and sort of just lead you to a win. Yeah. He's never going to be that guy. But like you said, there are a handful of teams. Jacksonville, he would probably do well at. I also think the Giants, he would do well with the Giants. Yeah. I think a team, even like Washington next year, because they're probably going to be without Smith, obviously, he would do well in the spot there, too. There are spots where I think he could do well. I just think in Miami, it's been long enough, and I think each side just needs to go in a new direction.
Yep, I agree entirely. I mean, it's just he's been doing okay, but eventually, I mean, you look around the rest of the team, he doesn't have that elite defense to help him. He doesn't have that elite ground attack. He doesn't really have that elite receiver. He doesn't have a Julio. He doesn't have an A.J. Green. So it's kind of like, well, what are you expecting him to do with what he has? So I think eventually you're going to need to move on and just kind of rebuild in a sense.
Yep. And that sort of leads into my next question with the head coach, Adam Gase. You know, he's coming under fire for last week's game against the Colts at the end of the game, how he called plays. And it's rightly deserved. I mean, that criticism is more than fair. Just how he just mishandled the end of that game, I think, in the eyes of many. What's your thoughts on the head coach? Honestly, all depending on how these final five games go, I think he'll probably be back next year. If I had to put a percentage on it, I think it's probably 65% he's back, 35% he's not. That's just what I think. But these last five games here are going to tell a lot, because if the team quits on him or if they come out and just lay eggs every week, he might be in trouble.
Yeah. I think he's back next year as well, unless something very bad happens in these next few games. I think the comments that Kenny Stills said kind of points to his frustration in this offense in general, because I think we all know Kenny Stills. He's about as nice as, you know, good of a character as you can get. And it is, you know, he's not a guy who's going to direct malice towards anybody, and it kind of slipped out of him that he's frustrated with the offense. So I think that says a lot. A lot of complaints at the beginning of the season were that the offense in the preseason looked too vanilla. And everyone was saying, you know, it's the preseason. Of course it's going to look vanilla. But the fact is, it kind of still does look vanilla. He had that big completion, Tannehill, to Leonte Carew that was 75 yards. But then if you look at the rest of the game, Tannehill only threw one pass beyond 10 yards past the line of scrimmage the entire game. And it was an incompletion to Kenny Stills. So the offense for the rest of the game was vanilla as well. And then you add on top of that, that call by Gates on third down and kind of giving up on the drive. It's kind of like, well, this offense isn't going to get you anywhere. It's not going to compete with these high offenses in the league. The way that the NFL is looking right now with the Chiefs, the Saints, all these high-octane offenses, this team can't match that. And if they get behind, I don't know what this team could do.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. That's still, that you have to look around the league, which obviously you have, and see what is working right now. You see the Rams, the Chiefs, the Saints, the Patriots, even like the Vikings to a lesser extent. They got playmakers upon playmakers who can just be, you know, hit you in waves, speed everywhere, big plays everywhere. And the Miami Dolphins are a slow, plodding, boring, predictable offense, and that's just not working. And some of that's on the quarterback, some of that's on the head coach, some of it's just on the philosophy that the franchise has and how the team is built, and that has to change. Wide receivers, when they're healthy, you know, it's great. Still, I mean, Stills, Grant, Wilson, Parker.
Yeah, I love Wilson. Great.
Those guys are fine. Could they use one more, like a main guy? Sure, but I'm not going to worry about that too much. Tight end, we'll see what's going on there. The rookie, Mike Gesicki, has been a bit of a disappointment, but he's still a rookie, so still some time for him to grow. Offensive line's always been a mess. Seems like they can't get it right, but there's no philosophy there. And in this offseason, I think they need to come up with something, like you said, to hang their hat on. They don't. And one of the names that will be out there that is sometimes rumored to have Miami as a possible landing spot this offseason would be Le'Veon Bell. Now, look, he would cost a ton of money, and he would eat up a ton of Miami's cap. That's why I wouldn't be in favor of getting him. What's your thoughts on Le'Veon Bell to Miami?
I'm all with you. I am very scared about going for those very costly running backs, especially when your team isn't built to contend just yet. An example I like to use is Todd Gurley. Todd Gurley came out in his rookie season. He looked tremendous. He looked like everything people expected him to be coming out of college. He looked great. And then the next year, the offensive line wasn't good. The system wasn't good. And it showed with Todd Gurley as well. He couldn't get anything going. He looked like a completely different person. Then the following year after that, you get a new coach. Jerry Goff comes in, and he's looking pretty good. And Gurley goes back to his old ways, and now he looks like an MVP candidate caliber player. That's just what he is. And it's not like his talent went away that one year where he was playing poor. It was all the things around it. The running back position is so dependent on other positions. I've been calling it a luxury position, that if you have the money to spend and you are in that position, if you have guys on rookie contracts, if your team is built to contend, then sure, go spend that extra money for the elite running back. But if you're not there yet, then you are paying someone that you don't know if they're going to be able to bring what they've been bringing if the rest of the system isn't in place. I mean, you look around the league, you got Alvin Kamara, third-round pick, rookie contract, Kareem Hunt, third-round pick, Aaron Jones for the Green Bay Packers. He's a rookie on a fifth-round he's a fifth-round rookie. It's just kind of like, well, why would you pay that luxury money for the elite running back when you have all these rookies who are kind of doing the same thing? And I think that's the direction that the NFL is heading, that we get these rookies while they're on their rookie contract. And then once it comes time to pay them, we just find another rookie to do it. The running back position is kind of built on athleticism. It's built on these young guys, and it's dependent on other factors as well. I just don't see the need to pay that premium if the rest of the team has a lot of holes. I just think it's not a wise thing to do.
Absolutely. I'm right there with you. And when you look around the league, you look at the teams that win Super Bowls and get to Super Bowls, and they're not led there by their running back. I can't even think. You probably got to go back to the 1980s for the last time that a running back was the main guy on a team who led their team to a Super Bowl. It's been that long. It's a quarterback's league. All that matters is the quarterback position. And once you got that solved, you can find running backs everywhere, even in Miami, which they don't use Drake enough. You know, if the team was good, he would be fine, more than capable of handling the load.
You can't tell me that if you put Kenyon Drake in James Conner's spot in Pittsburgh, that he wouldn't be doing the same thing. Athletically, You know, Kenyon Drake is a home run threat. He is incredible. I think when he gets the ball in his hands, he could do some magical things. And it's a shame that he's not getting that those touches. It's a shame that the system isn't in place for him to succeed the way that I think we all know he can. And I think that why pay that premium for a running back? You have Kenyon Drake. He's a very capable guy. And I'm anxious to see what he can do if he gets those touches.
Yeah, and we saw at the end of last year, which is why everyone had high hopes for this year for him, but it just seems like the head coach, for whatever reason, just doesn't like to use him as much as he probably should be used. Uh-huh. I don't understand it. Maybe there's something happening behind the scenes we don't know about, which is always possible. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it is a bit head-scratching that he doesn't see the ball more. He's Miami's most gifted player on offense. He is a home run threat. And we saw what he did at the end of last year. He made big plays. He helped them win games late in the year. And we're just not using them. And it's really confusing.
Yeah. But with that being said, I don't want to say that as a knock on Frank Gore.
Either. Oh, no.
I think Frank Gore is looking really impressive. It's kind of shocking to see what he's able to do at this age. I'm impressed every time I see him. So that's
absolutely
not a knock on him either.
Not at all. Because if he wants to return and play one more year, I have no problem handing him another one-year contract because he has been fantastic this year. And, mm-hmm. I mean, man, he is good at his age. Let's talk about this Sunday's game against the Buffalo Bills. Now, the Bills back in September were the laughing stock of the league. Right now, nobody's laughing. They are playing halfway decent. Josh Allen, you know, he has his moments where he doesn't look great. But for the most part, has done okay as a rookie quarterback. He's missed a bunch of games, but he'll be out there this week. What are your thoughts on this Sunday's game between Miami and the Bills?
I think this should be a game that Miami wins. Everything kind of points, I think, to Miami winning this game. What I see in Josh Allen is I think he does have potential. That is for sure. But I see a guy who's in a situation kind of similar to what Ryan Tannehill was at the beginning of his career. Because if you look at Allen, he is running for his life out there. He does not have a lot of passing yards. I think he is having to use his feet more than he would like to. He's just kind of doing whatever works for him. And I admire him for that. He's definitely having a rough season. The thing that scares me the most about this Buffalo Bills game is LeSean McCoy. He is also having a pretty rough year. He's getting, I think, 3.3 yards per carry. Nothing's working for this entire offense. But Miami's run defense right now especially is a huge concern for me. If this ends up being a huge game for LeSean McCoy, like 120-plus yards, then I do think it could go either way. I just think that if you limit Le'Veon Bell, limit LeSean McCoy, rather, then that kind of shuts out what the Bills are capable of doing on offense. I don't think Josh Allen is in a place right now where he can take over a game, and I think it will have to depend on LeSean McCoy's involvement.
Yep, absolutely, because the Bills' wide receivers are nothing to write home about. They do not have a big-time passing attack. They don't have a lot of weapons on the outside. Running the ball.
Their defense is good.
Yep, they're playing pretty good on defense, and that's what they're going to do. They're going to play defense, which shouldn't be hard against Miami's offense the way it's looked the past, God, I don't know how many weeks now. And they're going to run the ball. And the Miami Dolphins this year have had trouble at times stopping the run. And that's why this game, I think the point spread's 5.5, I believe, or 5. This is going to probably be a field goal game. I do think Miami will win. I think they'll come back, and I think they'll get a win at home. Because, A, at home, they always play a lot better at home. I just think this is a game to win here at home against the Bills. And I think the Bills will, you know, it'll be a low-scoring game, and they will probably struggle as well to put up points because Xavier Howard will probably take out whoever the Bills' best wide receiver is, and they don't have a lot of weapons there.
Yeah.
After that, I don't know who else they got. So I can't see Miami winning here. This is the type of matchup that Miami does well against, a team that can't spread them out, throw it deep, and sort of create mismatches. So I think they'll win. But it's by no means is this a lock or anything because the Bills right now are playing well. And the Bills, if you look at their schedule, they're not out of this. I mean, if they get to 8-8 or if they get to 9-7, do not be shocked if they head into week 17 with a chance maybe of winning some help to sneak into the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the way I look at this game, I think it's going to be one of those grimy, almost kind of painful to watch just because I think there's going to be some inefficiency on both sides of the field offensively for both teams. And I could see this as a game. I think the turnovers are going to determine who wins or loses. I think Josh Allen's the guy that if you pressure him, if you put him in a bad position, you can force the turnovers there. And then I see it, you know, the same thing could go for Miami. You know, if Tannehill's in a rough position, this Bills defense is very capable of capitalizing on that. I think turnovers will play a huge role in this game.
Yep, yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of Matt Huck and a lot of Matt Dar, who is the punter for the Bills. Those guys are going to have a busy day. I wouldn't be shocked if each of them have six or seven punts each. They're going to have a very busy day. Steven, thanks so much for joining us here on the podcast. Everyone, be sure to follow Steven on Twitter at Shady Steven, and also check out Via the Source on Twitter at Via the Source. And you might be hearing a little more of Steven right here at DolphinsTalk.com here in the coming days and weeks. Steven, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again down the road.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I truly appreciate it. And, you know, hopefully we see a dub this weekend, you know?
Absolutely. Hope we see a win.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Be sure to visit DolphinsTalk.com every day for all of your latest Miami Dolphins news.